This is the EWN Radio Network.
The advice at the time, generally from a GP, was you needed to have a diet rich in fibre, which I had been eating. And she said to me, that diet is going to kill you.
Cue music. Places, everybody, places. We're starting in 3, 2.
It's time for Life Interrupted Radio, a show dedicated to practical skills for your mind, body, and soul. We're hoping we'll go in one ear and stay there. Here's the host of the show, Sharon Saylor.
Welcome to the Autoimmune Hour on Life Interrupted Radio, where we look at the rise of autoimmune disorders. The NIH estimates nearly 24 million Americans have an autoimmune disorder. To put that in perspective, cancer affects about 9 million and heart disease up to 22 million. You'll be as surprised as I was to find out what autoimmune entails. I brought together top experts that range from doctors, specialists, nutritionists, researchers, and even those recovering from autoimmune to bring you the latest, most up-to-date information about autoimmunity and how to live your life uninterrupted. So let's get started.
Oh my goodness. Welcome. Welcome to the Autoimmune Hour on Life Interrupted Radio. I'm your host, Sharon Saylor from SharonSaylor.com and MindfulnessInActionBook.com. And thank you, Wayne, for that great introduction as always. You're just so much fun. Anyway, speaking of fun, it's my weekend. I hope it's your weekend too and that you've got something fun planned. I've got some fun things planned, but wanted to tell you a little story first. Oh, tea, what I'm drinking right now. I'm drinking a chai tea, a very spicy chai tea with homemade almond milk. So it's really luscious. Tastes kind of like a real zippy cocoa, but I know there's no cocoa in it, so it's pretty cool. Anyway, that's what I'm drinking. What are you curled up with tonight? Now, to my little story, and the setup for our guest, too. Well, this is an interesting little story. I spent the week at a friend's house out of town as I was attending a conference, and I was able to spend some time at their place. And one morning, they were so sweet, went out, got organic vegetables, and made me this beautiful mixed organic vegetable juice. It was just lovely. I mean, it went to all this effort from their heart. It was just lovely. However, I took just a couple of drinks and I started to have a sensitivity to it. I started to have some odd reactions that sometimes when we have autoimmune conditions, we get sensitivities to certain foods. Couldn't figure it out. It was all organic and great foods. And slowly the next day, what we did was we juiced each item separately, just a little bit of juice in each item separately, and I tasted them, and it turned out it was the beets. Now, you ask most people and they'd raise your hand, beets, are they nutritious? Yes, you know, all of that. But for whatever reason, for me, for my system now, I've got to be extra cautious around beets. Fascinating, isn't it? I knew there's other things that I've avoided, like when we had Peter Osborne on and he talked about avoiding gluten and some of the gluten-based grains. Absolutely. So I'm staying away from glutens. I'm also reading labels and being careful about preservatives and processed foods and things like that, just making sure that I'm being as careful as I can be in a lot of my diet. But it is surprising to me that when foods that appear for most people to be absolutely healthy cause a problem for some of us. And so that's my story about food sensitivities, and it leads right into our guest today because she is a fascinating lady that I actually met in a Facebook group, and a busy lady, and she also has IBS. Now, there's some discussion on whether IBS is an autoimmune condition or not, but that doesn't really matter because about her story is about thriving regardless of your diagnosis, because she had IBS probably the most critically that I've ever heard of. Now, I'm sure there's probably others equally critical or even more, but for our guest, Sarah McClair, her story is just unbelievable in its believability. And I know that sounds kind of odd, but you're just like, wow, I've heard things like that, but I had no idea people really went through things like that. And Sarah is a busy lady. Now she's the mom of two energetic and highly entertaining little girls. She's the wife of a music reviewer and an ex-architect blogger, and she's the director of two demanding jewelry businesses. And she knows what it's like because every single day from the time she was 18 until now, she has a chronic illness. It's known as IBS. She struggled with it, she survived it, and now she's learned to thrive and overcome IBS. And she always kind of puts air quotes around for the most part. And like I said, she's an active jewelry maker and an art business coach, so she keeps her pretty busy. As well as during this time of struggling through IBS, she got her master's and her PhD in jewelry history. But as she says, that's a whole nother story. When she first started out with IBS, she dropped a tremendous amount of weight, and she knew she was in serious trouble, but her doctors kept telling her either it was all in her head, she was suffering from stress, or it was just anorexia, and she was not owning up to that. Luckily for her, a dietitian saved her life by introducing her to a new way to look at foods. And she shares her own story. Now, I want to point out here that this is Sarah's story, and it's for us to learn from, just like my beet story. Beets may be perfectly fine for you. For me, they caused a reaction. So I'm like, okay, don't know what that's about. How many people have the reaction? Don't know. Doesn't really matter. This is just a story of someone else's thriving and understanding what they went through to become thriving, and realize that some of her suggestions are a bit unique, but they work for her. And this is all about, when we talk on the Autoimmune Hour with people who have autoimmune conditions, this is all about getting someone else's story and understanding, wow, that worked for her. I should talk to my medical professionals and see, hey, is this something we haven't thought about? Is this something that maybe we should explore? This isn't about a radical like, oh my goodness, I have to do Sarah's diet or I have to give up beets, okay? Because neither Sarah or I are medical professionals. We're just two people that we have overcome and now are thriving in our life. So, got it? Maybe, just maybe, food sensitivities are something worth looking into. So, welcome, Sarah. It's so much fun to have you on the show.
Thanks for having me. It's lovely to be here. It's nice to be able to talk to people who are genuinely interested in what you have to say. And yes, I've had quite an interesting journey with my IBS. Going back to what you were talking about, is 20 years ago, I was pretty critically ill from IBS, where it'd been going on for a good few years. And I mean, I was diagnosed when I was 18, and at that time I was doing a set of exams in school. So here it's our A-levels, which is our last 2 years of kind of your high school. I was just told, well, it was stress and it would go away after my exams were finished. But at the same time, I was also diagnosed with an ovarian cyst. So as soon as they found out I had an ovarian cyst, the IBS was kind of brushed away. And well, I actually remember the consultant saying to my mother, well, you know why it's called IBS, don't you? Do you know it's a syndrome? It's actually pretty much made up. You know, I lived for the next few years. I went to university, and a few things happened then, which now I attribute to the decline, where in the middle of university, I took a really bad kidney infection and ended up in hospital, was basically put on, I think, 6 months of antibiotics.
6 months. Wow, my goodness.
But don't forget, this was over, that was probably 25 years ago. So the sort of things we know about antibiotics and the gut and gut health, there was no knowledge of that. I mean, I didn't know any of that. So obviously I recovered from that. Interestingly, now I'm anaphylactic to that particular antibiotic. But a few years after that, well, really from that point, my IBS started to decline, and I just lived with it. I thought it was normal. You know, I knew there were some things I probably shouldn't eat, but I was a student, and, you know, well, students like to go out and party and drink alcohol and maybe stay up late and those sort of things. And I just got on with life. But then I moved to London and started doing my PhD, and that's when things went really downhill. My IBS, I would say, was becoming chronic at that point. I think I spent 2 full years of my life where I was nauseous every single second of the day. On a bad day, I might have had diarrhea 40, 50 times a day. Do you know, I mean, that's how bad it got. And on a good day, it might have been 10 times a day. And on a good day, I could have left the house. And at this time, I was studying for a PhD, and I had to have coping mechanisms in place about how I would physically get myself out of the house and get to college. I had to have routines to be able to get from one place to the other without basically needing to go to the toilet. Do you know, I just accepted that. But then it just got worse and worse. And I mean, it sounds terrible, but no matter what I ate, it was going through me, including water. I mean,
wow.
And obviously I was starting to lose weight. I remember going home. I lived in London. I remember going back to Ireland one holiday time. Someone said to me, you know, you're really thin. And I never thought anything of it because I was thin anyway. Then pain level, the nausea, all of that just really started to get on top of me. There were times when I thought, is this what life's really going to be like for me? I don't know if I can actually cope with this. Yeah, there were times when I actually ate my dinner on the toilet. I mean, that's how quickly that I reacted to what I was eating. I mean, it would literally come out the other end. I mean, it sounds a terrible thing to talk about, but that was the reality of what I was facing. So I knew something had to change, and I went to the GP, and as soon as they see something like that, they instantly think, oh, it's got to be, it can't just be IBS, it must be something else. And so for the second time in my life since, I mean, I was 18 the first time I was diagnosed, this was about 22, I had to go through all the tests again. So, you know, there was laparoscopies and barium meals, and they checked everything and ruled out a lot of other conditions. So I didn't have Crohn's disease. I didn't have an ulcerated bowel. You know, they were checking for cancer. I mean, I'd lost so much weight that all these issues were being brought up, and they ruled all of that out. I went back to the GP, and I remember sitting beside him, and he went, well, you know, you're just going to have to face the fact that you're anorexic. And I thought, oh my goodness.
I think you would know that, or not.
Or not. You know, I said to him, but this isn't anorexia. I said, you can't tell me that when I eat a meal and literally within minutes of having eaten that meal, I am on the toilet, and I'm not on the toilet throwing up. It's like there's a pipe runs from one end to the other, and there's nothing.
A straight pipe.
Do you know, it's a straight pipe. Yeah, there's no kinks, no stomach there. And he didn't understand it. And he actually talked about, I might have to consider being sectioned to go into hospital for this. And I thought, right, I'm lucky that I'm a very strong-willed person. And I knew, I mean, inside my head was screaming, going, you know, he's talking crap here. Literally, he's talking crap. And I thought, how am I going to get out of this? Because he can't accept that. Oh, we've ruled all those other things out. And he said to me, do you know, you've made all this up. This is in your head. And so I said to him, look, the only thing I haven't tried is a dietitian. And he said, well, what use is that going to do? And I said, because I truly believe that I'm reacting to this food. There's something that I'm eating, or things that I'm eating, and this is triggering all of this. And I really don't know what to do about it. And he said, well, I don't think that's going to solve your problem. And I said, well, do you have a dietitian connected to the surgery? And he said, yes. And I said, well, I would like to see her. So he reluctantly made the appointment. And I remember going home. I had 3 days. And I remember going home and I got out a file pad and I wrote for a couple of hours. I think I filled 6 double sides of A4 paper, writing out all my symptoms and all the things I thought. And I thought, right, this is my last straw. I can't live like this anymore. I went in, she was called Lisa. I went in and I sat down in front of her, and I was very nervous because I really wanted her to believe me that, you know, I was ill. It was not in my head. I was not making this up. And I got out my file paper and she went, I know what you're going to say. And she said, we will go through all of that. She said, you don't need to tell me your symptoms. She said, I've been doing research with one of the local teaching hospitals. I'm going to ask you 10 questions. I'm going to tell you you're one of 3 types of IBS, and then we're going to deal with your diet starting from right now. And I thought, oh, well, at first it was, oh no, she's not going to listen to me. You know, she's bypassing everything that I've written, and I've spent all this time, and I've all these things to tell you. But she nailed it on the head, because I already knew from the test that I had a spasmic colon. And in the last set of tests, the doctor was able to show me that part of my bowel did not work properly. It was in such spasm that it was actually basically open all the time. And that's really why the food was being passed through. But he never did anything about that. He was just like, well, there's nothing really we can do. We'll give you some pills. Here you go. See you in 4 months' time or whatever. But she said, no, this is what we're going to do. The advice at the time, generally from a GP, was you needed to have a diet rich in fibre, which I had been eating. And she said to me, that diet is going to kill you.
I probably went, yeah, I think I figured that out.
Yeah, I think I already know that. And at this point, now I'm a thin person, I'm like small, so I probably normally weigh about 7.5 stone. I don't know what that is in pounds, but I had dropped down to under 5 stone at this point. So I had lost 2 stone and I was so thin, my periods had stopped. And that's one of the reasons I knew I was in trouble if that was happening. Mm-hmm. And it was affecting like my sugar levels and everything, you know, mood swings, chronic fatigue, a lot of panic attacks. And again, yes, that's also part to do with anxiety. Actually, when your body goes into that kind of decline, that actually causes the panic attacks because it puts everything out of balance. And I only know that now looking back. Yeah, she said to me, the first thing you're going to learn today is that there's 2 different types of fibre. One you must avoid and the other one is what you need more of. And she explained to me that there was soluble fibre and insoluble fibre, and that the insoluble fibre is what was harming my gut and the soluble fibre is what I needed to actually start to stabilise my gut. Now, I'd never heard this before, and, you know, in those days, don't forget, we didn't really have computers and we didn't have Google, and it wasn't like you had access to any of the knowledge that I would have now. So I thought, well, I've got to give this a go. I don't know if she's wrong or right, but she is my only choice. And she said to me, "No, you know, we went through a whole diet plan, which is pretty strict."
Let's describe for the listeners here. What is the difference between insoluble and soluble, just so we can follow along as you tell us what the diet pattern belongs to? Maybe some of our listeners haven't heard those 2 terms before, so.
Yeah, sure. So it takes some time because, you know, we're just told fiber, full stop. The way I look at it is, can you mash something? So I call it a food's mashability.
I love that, a food's mashability. I hadn't thought of it that way.
If something, say we take a potato or carrots, if you cook those and you mash them, they're quite mashable. So they're higher in soluble fiber. Let's take the idea of a tomato. Say you tried to mash a tomato. You could mash its flesh, but you couldn't mash the skin or the seeds. So that means that the flesh of a tomato is more soluble than its skin or its seeds, which are insoluble. So then if you look at something like a green leafy veg, I mean, if you tried to mash that up, it would be stringy and fibrousy. You couldn't mash it. So that they are really high in insoluble fiber. All of a sudden, what I had been told previously was healthy was no longer healthy for my stomach. If you go through the list, what you have to limit are green vegetables, all the leafy greens, nuts, seeds, beans, pulses. They're all higher in insoluble fiber, and that's to do with the fact that their outer coating is hard. Sometimes you can eat the inner coating more because it's the soft part, but your gut would still have to break down that hard shell first. So therefore, it's insoluble to your stomach.
I think that's what other people find hard for us in our world, that I think most people with autoimmune have some diet restrictions. And I know sometimes people get a little snarky and say, well, what can you eat? And it becomes difficult for people to understand. Because if you said, well, I can't eat leafy greens, and I could, you know, my mother is, but they're healthy.
And so many...
Yeah, exactly. You know,
they are, for some.
They are healthy, for some, exactly. Nowadays, I can eat a leafy green, but I could not eat a leafy green every day of the week. So now that my stomach is totally under control and I control my symptoms, I could have a leafy green a couple of times a week. But if I had a salad every day for lunch, I would be ill by the end of that week. I have to learn how to stagger. I still need to eat the leafy green, but I have to learn how to eat it. Other things are, I've learned that you shouldn't eat an insoluble fiber on an empty stomach. So actually, even how you physically eat the meal in front of you can determine if your stomach's going to like it. So if you sit down to a meal of, say we have potatoes with chicken and broccoli, and you go, oh, I really like that broccoli. Now, if I ate that broccoli first on an empty stomach, I'm more likely to feel sick after that meal. I actually need to start with the more soluble fiber on that plate, which would be the potatoes, because that lines my stomach. Then eat the meat or the chicken, and then have the leafy green. And I've learnt all of that myself over the years through basically trial and error. And those really aren't things you generally find written in books.
Yes.
I mean, I do know now, really, in the days when I was learning, there was nothing. I mean, I don't even know. I think I had one book originally. I had nothing else to go on. And I had to really learn by my own stomach and what happened.
Well, one of the key things I want to point out that I hear so often, hearing in your story and other stories, as well as my own story, is you're saying you didn't have a lot of books. Well, you know, even now, almost with the plethora of books that we have, it can be equally confusing. There, I was just speaking to a friend this morning who was been put on a couple of different diets, and she was commenting, well, I'm supposed to eat this on the FODMAP, which is a popular diet for people with autoimmune. And then she said, but then... And when I look at all of these things that are low on the FODMAP, some of them have oxalates, and my kidney doctor said, I'm not supposed to have oxalates. And she was practically crying because she says, I just don't know what to eat. But I love your story because you're saying, look, trial and error was the best way to figure out what my system needed.
Yeah, and even like FODMAPs, well, that didn't exist 20 years ago when I was doing that. I mean, I only learned about them in the last few years. And when I look through the list of what's a low FODMAP, actually, I laugh at some of those things because I think absolutely no way can I eat those. So I think if you mix FODMAPs with my insoluble soluble information, then actually you might have quite a good diet. The good thing about FODMAPs is the big cool diet, and because it's got scientific backing behind it, that doesn't mean it's right for you. You have to learn to take some things out of it and just start. I mean, I know how overwhelming it is when you think, oh my God, you look in the cupboard and you're almost scared to eat because you know you're going to be ill afterwards. The big thing about diet that I eat is that I eat no brown, no wholemeal grains. I have to eat white breads, white pasta, white rice. Those are all things that have been, oh no, they're so bad for you. But actually, they're not. They're not bad for me. I've learned over the years to find better quality. You know, carbs get such a bad rep as well. But I actually have to eat a carb in every meal. Otherwise, it will affect my stomach. Again, that's come down to years of doing it. You know, if I'm having a sandwich, it has to be on white bread. I cannot eat wholemeal bread or bread that has seed and nuts in it. Now, I could have that once in a while if I wanted a treat, but on a daily basis, I eat all the whites. I eat lots of pasta and I eat lots of rice, and they're all white as well.
Let's stop right there because we need to take a quick commercial break. But when we come back, we're going to hear from Sarah about, you know, I'm nodding my head here as I'm listening to Sarah because she eats very differently than I do, but we both eat the way that serves our bodies best. So we're going to talk about how we figure that out when we come back, because she's just been great. Besides her expertise in all her other businesses, she's got some great recipes and things and how she's figured out how to eat, regardless of what the medical people say. Because I remember when she said, I eat all the whites, and I was just thinking of a headline I saw the other day. I know we got to take a quick commercial break, but it said something about eat the rainbow. So we'll talk with Sarah once we get back from this commercial break about eat the whites or eat the rainbows or what the heck you eat. So we'll be right back.
Life Interrupted Radio will return after these messages from our sponsors. It's great sponsors like these that keep this show coming to you every week. Be sure and stop by lifeinterruptedradio.com to learn more. This episode is brought to you by mindfulnessinactionbook.com. To get your free 4-minute guided meditation to relax, refresh, and renew in just 4 minutes, and who doesn't have 4 minutes? Stop by mindfulnessinactionbook.com now. This guided meditation is in handy MP3 format, so you can use it anywhere, anytime. Download it now at mindfulnessinactionbook.com.
Do you want to be a better leader, have better relationships, become more self-aware, be a better communicator? Hi, I'm Sharon Saylor, best-selling author, professional speaker, and executive coach. And my life passion is empowering professionals to be the best that they can be. After years of working with professionals, I've discovered the 7 things nobody is telling you that can cost you your clients, sales, and even your career. And I want to give it to you free. You've heard my show, you know my passion, and maybe we'll be working together sooner rather than later. So go grab this ebook now to find out the 7 things that's costing you big time over at SharonSaylor.com/radio gift. Well, welcome back. This is Sharon Saylor from SharonSaylor.com, and we're part of the Autoimmune Hour on Life Interrupted Radio here. And we've just been having this amazing conversation about someone who's actually survived IBS, and I know we all survive our things as we're going through this, but she has really survived and thrived and leads a life where she says her gut is stable pretty much 95% of the time. So welcome back, Sarah. And, you know, your history is just amazing, frustrating, and all too often the same sort of sets of no one believed me, they thought I was faking it, they thought it was in my head. The whole history seems to be something that I hear quite often, and I say far too often, that it's dismissed or it sounds like too much work to fix. I've wondered that a couple of times where I've had a symptom that I've repeated over and over and over until someone finally listened to me and they go, well, that's a pretty significant symptom. And I often wondered if it just sounded like too much work to try to figure it out, so they ignored it. But I could be wrong on that, but that was what went through my head when I kept repeating the same symptom over and over. But one of the things we were talking about before we had to take that quick commercial break was the way that you have found out works for you in eating. And if I was to put it on, I'll say on paper, it would probably go against a lot of today's recommendations. And I'm all for if it works for you, it works for you. So let's talk about how you found out. You know, as when you said I eat white bread, I'm thinking how many people just would dismiss white bread as even a possibility these days without even trying it.
Yeah, I mean, this goes back to the dietitian who was, because white breads are higher in soluble fiber, which is what your gut needs. So basically, there's different types of IBS. So some people suffer from diarrhea and some people suffer from constipation and some people suffer from a mix. But soluble fiber will fix both types of diarrhea, because what it does is it basically combines with water in the gut and it provides like a substance that allows it to flow nicely through the gut. So if you suffer from diarrhea, it will help bind the diarrhea. And if you suffer from constipation, it helps soften everything up and it basically helps to keep your gut mobility in that nice smooth rhythm. That was something that was really excited when I heard about that. So therefore, that's how I got onto, well, it has to all be all the whites, because when you eat brown bread or brown rice or wholemeal, they're all made with insoluble fiber. So you're actually going to do your gut more harm. But again, this is IBS related. So this diet might not. And, you know, we also have to stop saying diet because it's not a diet. I'm not on a diet.
Yeah, you know, it's a good point.
It's an eating plan. You know, we're all programmed to think that, oh my goodness, you're on a diet, therefore you're doing it to lose weight. And it's, you know, that's incorrect. So that's how I started to eat the whites. Now, I'm going to tell you something else, because a few years ago as well, my father dropped dead very sadly of a heart attack, which was totally, we didn't expect it. He had been ill with pneumonia, he recovered, and then he dropped dead at the boardroom table. It turned out that he had 75% chronic heart disease, which had been totally undetected. He was a thin man, never smoked or drank, had a pretty decent diet. And I had a big freak out after this because I take after him. And I was thinking, oh my goodness, you know, I do have this diet where I eat white breads and white pasta, and we're told that this is all bad for you and bad for your heart. I had convinced myself at that point that I was heading for a heart attack because of what had happened. So I went to the doctor. She basically said to me, well, the only thing I can offer you is a cholesterol test. And I said, well, I know my cholesterol's low. And she said, well, what are you asking me to do? You know, are you asking me to send you for tests? And I said, yes. And she said, well, I'm not going to do that. So I went away really annoyed. So then I made an appointment a couple of weeks later, and I had a big freak out in her in the surgery, you know, with the meeting, and I show her that I was really serious. She wouldn't take me seriously, and therefore you wouldn't get a referral to go and see a specialist. So anyway, so I got the referral for a specialist, and here it takes a long time to go through the system. I had the last test last week, and my heart is totally healthy. There is nothing there, no hardening of the arteries, not even the beginning of hardening of the arteries. I have low cholesterol, and therefore that was such proof to me that the diet that I'm eating is actually healthy for me, regardless of what has been written about some of the foods that I eat. And that just was proof for me that, thank goodness, you know, I know that I can continue quite happily and to be able to talk about it quite openly. But for somebody else eating a whole load of white bread and pasta, well, maybe you might also be gluten intolerant. So you have to make sure that you are tested for that as well, because obviously then if you can't eat gluten, you're going to have to find something else that you can eat. So it is really about personalizing what we eat. I think the problem here is that when you go to the doctor or a specialist, they want to give you a pill, and if that pill doesn't work, then they're really stumped. They don't really know what to do. Throughout the years, I've had doctors say all sorts of things to me. And I mean, it's really been quite ludicrous. I guess I also turned to alternative medicine and alternative practices, because I found that if you went to a naturopath or, you know, whatever homeopath or whatever type of alternative medicine you like, they actually looked at you personally. It wasn't about going through a textbook and here's a pill for that. You know, they really tried to work with you independently, and I think that makes a big difference as well. You know, we've got to use Western medicine to diagnose us, and if we have something serious and you need medication, you've got to take it. But you can also mix that with an alternative viewpoint and get the best of both worlds. And you know, that's how I learned to eat and to use food. Food is my medicine. You know, that is my healing tool. And if I have any form of relapse, I mean, I can heal myself in a couple of days, where years ago, I could have been sick for a month afterwards.
One of the key takeaways I'm getting, Sarah, is really just trust yourself and listen to yourself. I find a lot of people I talk to are still caught up in what the doctor said. And oftentimes I can just shake my head the number of times I've looked at the doctor and said, you know, that may be good advice, but that's not going to work for me. And I've had arguments with doctors and actually fired a few, but yes. You got to be willing to do that. You got to be willing, because it sounds like I'm hearing part of your success and your thriving now has been knowing your body and yourself well enough to know, will that work for me? Or maybe that'll work for somebody else, but not for me.
And questioning things. Just because someone is a doctor, it doesn't mean they're right. It means they have an opinion of something. You know, I mean, I have a natural research brain, so if someone says something to me, I'll go, okay, but I'll go away and find five other pieces of research, and I'll look at all of those before I make my own choice, so that for me it is informed and I feel informed. And ask for help you know, nowadays there's people like me. I mean, I'm blogging about all these things to try and help other people and educate them. I'm not saying you must follow the same way I do, but I'm saying, well, do you know, I've put up with it and survived it, and this is my journey over the 40 years, and this is what I've done for the last 20. And, you know, can I help one person to feel better? And like you were saying earlier, that overwhelm of maybe you're just first diagnosed and you have a thing where you go, oh, great, you know, I've been diagnosed, but then you're kind of left with it. And often you're left to get on with it yourself, mm-hmm. and you really don't know what to do next. And that overwhelm, look online and look for people who are writing about it, because you might just be able to allow yourself to start healing just by something simple, or reach out to people. I mean, nowadays, Facebook, and, you know, you can send someone a message very quickly. I mean, we couldn't do that before. You had to send them a letter or you know, pick up the phone.
That's what I love. That's how you and I connected, was through Facebook.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I think that's powerful now, because even if they can't relate to IBS, what we call IBS-C, which is stands for, IBS-D, which stands for diarrhea.
Yeah.
IBS-C is the constipation version. They can see, well, look, this person, they tried a dietitian, oh my goodness, and she willing to ask the doctor for what she knew her body needed and wanted. And even when you were telling the story about your father, and we're so sorry to hear of your loss with your father, your mind needed to be consoled, your mind needed to know, and then allowed your body to get on with it because of that. So that's powerful to me, when we know ourselves well enough and know what we need to be able to have us to move forward. I have a quick story I've shared a couple of times, where a person was told they needed their colon removed because they had IBS-C, and told this by two top gastroenterologists, and she just knew in her heart that wasn't going to be the way it was. You know, that wasn't going to work.
Yeah.
And found relief through diet and lifestyle changes, even though that was never offered to her through the gastroenterology people that she saw. And so I love your story, because you kept searching and searching and knowing, weighing, as you said, you're a native researcher, just a natural researcher, and able to sort out, well, let me try this and see if it works. Let me try that and see if it works. And always put a little asterisk by all of them, whether it's going to gastroenterology, where they said to this person, we're going to have to remove your colon, and she found a natural cure, or the other way around. You've got to do your research, because it may work for somebody else, but it might not work with your genetics or your body, your lifestyle, whatever that is. So, and I so appreciate your blog. Why don't you share with the audience where your blog is, and talk to us a little bit about, I know you've got amazing recipes on there too, and then folks, they're not all just white bread either. So there are a wide variety of recipes on there. So talk to us a little bit more about what you share on your blog. I know a lot of it is your own story, but and how you came up with the idea of sharing recipes.
Well, it's probably a bit more than a year ago, but I just seemed to have a calling that it was time to start writing about my journey, because throughout the years people have asked me for help. I seem to be quite good at, if you've eaten a plate of something and you feel ill, my speciality seems to be, well, I'll tell you what was on the plate that actually made you ill, and it won't be what you thought it was. So I mean, that's how it kind of started. You know, friends would say, oh, I felt really sick, I ate this, and I would go, well, it was that, and that, you know, they'd try next time and see if that actually was what made them feel ill. And things that have worked for me and my journey. And that's really how it started. I literally, I suppose you could call it a blog site. I mean, I don't have anything for sale. I'm not selling anything. It is just it's my journey. And I just started doing posts. I mean, it's still only a year old, and I'm still building up the content and that. But all of a sudden, I realized I had all this information. And how did I get all this information out? I just thought, well, it's like everything, I have to just start it. I just started to write blog posts at a time. Then they started to build up. And then I started a Facebook page. And again, that's starting to build up. And it's still really early days for that, but I already have email list and people have been, you know, sending me messages, thank you very much. And here's my list of, I have like a food facts list, and I started off with, here's my yum tum foods, here's my big bad no-no foods, and everything else is a caution food, therefore. And I've tried to write a little paragraph about why, so that people understand, like, my big bad no-no foods. These are all foods that are gut irritants to everybody, not just people with IBS. So there's some big things on that and why you should cut those out. And then I did all the yum tum foods, which are all my sort of safe, soluble fiber foods and things that I would return back to if I was ill, or, you know, say I had a bout of food poisoning. These are the foods I would return to. And I've explained why in those. And then everything else is basically a caution food. So eating the rainbow and all those fruit and veg, they're all caution foods. And I need to explain those more, and I'll do that over time. And the recipes are just beginning. I never really thought people would be interested, but that's what people are asking me for. Well, what can I eat? And I take it for granted because, you know, we just cook every day. So as I go along, I will increase the recipes. And then the blog is called IBS Help. So you can go in there and search for things and see what I've written topics on. You know, there's so much I want to add in, you know, even about how to deal with your IBS when you're pregnant and after you've had a baby, because all these things affect everything, you know. So it's really about joining me on that journey, and the hope that I spark something off and that I'm a real person as well. I live with this, I deal with this, I wouldn't say I've survived. I don't actually believe it's something that you can cure at this point in time. But that doesn't matter to me because, as I said, 95% of the time my gut is stable, and the other 5% is either through illness or, say, I go out somewhere and I eat something which I don't realise has something in it that I shouldn't have eaten. And those would be the only times now that upset me. So I've lived with all of that. So that's what I want the website to be. It's called ibsvitality.com, and it really is about kicking IBS's butt, because, you know, we have to live and such a busy person, and I don't have time to be sick. None of us have time to be sick. But we also have to live within our own bodies as well. And I think that's something that I have learned to do. And, you know, well, there's times when, you know, I need to slow down as well. But I've also accomplished all these other things, even with IBS. You know, I realise that quirks. Now I'm starting to share that I've never shared with people before about even, I just realised my whole life was revolved around the comfort of my stomach, even down to the clothes that I wear. And I admitted recently to someone that to wear tights, obviously I come from Ireland, it's colder here, we wear a lot of tights. I absolutely detest tights because they are so tight around your stomach. And I cut all the bands off the top of them so that I can wear them. So, do you know, I have all these silly little like survival tips. And I thought, well, do you know, other people, I've told a few people that and they thought it was hilarious, but then they went home and did it themselves. And, you know, they sent me a message to say that really worked. I'm really glad about that. So it's about being real and a real person. And we have to let our guard down and share some of these things, our coping mechanisms, as I would say, and our survival tips, and come along for the journey. And it's like having children. You end up talking about poo all the time. It's terrible, but that is what happens when you have IBS. You talk about that all around the dinner table. So just like when you have kids. So that's all part of the fun, and, you know, to help someone out of the low times as well, because I know what it's like to feel absolutely miserable and really feel like there's no way you can go on, but you can, and it's little steps at a time, and you bring yourself out of it. So
that's what I love about your blog, is it's real, and I'm gonna put in air quotes, it's raw, folks, but it's so refreshing. And what I loved about it is because I just felt like I'd found a sister, because my mission with the Autoimmune Hour and Life Interrupted Radio is to share my own survival or and my thriving and my journey through my autoimmune condition. And, you know, Sarah is sharing with others about how she is conquering IBS and leading a full and rich life regardless of that diagnosis, just like I'm leading a full and rich life regardless of my diagnosis. And that's what's so important, I think, especially if you've just been diagnosed. Oftentimes that's when it's the bleakest and you're overwhelmed, and just knowing that someone else is, hey, we're doing good, we're doing okay, we're doing great, is helpful psychologically and keeps you motivated to keep searching for your own answers. Now, Sarah's answers might not be your answers, or they might be, but you'll know best. But you know that being able to thrive and continue to lead the life that you want is possible, just like why I bring the autoimmune hour is that when I first got that diagnosis, I was stunned. I didn't even know what it was. I had to go look it up. I couldn't even spell it. And I had to go.
Yeah.
I had to go look it up. Thank goodness Google was around at the time of my diagnosis. Although maybe not, because then I was even more scared because I'm reading about it online without anybody to describe to me what it really meant. But now that I'm in the process of understanding what it really means that, and meeting all these great people like Sarah, you can lead a full, rich life. We just have a couple minutes left, Sarah, but about that full, rich life, share about your other business so people know that it just doesn't revolve around the I'll put in air quotes, the poo, and your personal blog, which is ibsvitality.com. But share about what you do as well, your entrepreneurship and all the great things that you do. I'm not going to say in your real life, because this is all about real life, but what you share in your business world.
Sure. You know, I was always an artist, so I was always a maker. So I went to art college and discovered that I liked to make jewelry, and I became a jeweler. And then so in the UK, you do like a 4-year degree, and I did that in Scotland. And then I moved to London to a college called Royal College of Art, where I was to go for 2 years and do a master's. But I ended up staying for 7 years, and I did a PhD in, and that was all by accident. I didn't know you could do a PhD in, you know, in jewelry. And my speciality there was I documented the history of children's jewelry, and it goes back to prehistoric times. So I'm fascinated by history and modernism, and, you know, mixing those two things together. So after I finished that, I decided that I'd move back to Ireland and we'd open a contemporary jewelry gallery. And I was stalking other makers' work. I think we had over 70 makers, all making contemporary jewelry. So not traditional jewelry, but still very beautiful work, you know, all sorts of materials. And through that, then obviously I made my own work, but I started to get asked to make things for people, you know, specific things. Can you make me this? I started to get asked, could I remodel things? So people maybe bring me something old and sentimental, maybe something that's been left to you, you know, an old set of rings or whatever. And I break those down and remake them. And then so for the last 15 years, I am a trained goldsmith, and that's what I have done for a business, and built that around my life. I make bespoke work. I also have collections, and I'm making a whole range of materials, all precious materials. You know, gold, diamonds, platinum, sapphires. You know, I work one-to-one with the client, and they'll come to me and we'll have a meeting. And some people have said it's like having a therapy session, because except that at the end of it, I've worked out their designs. We go through a series of drawings, and it's all about hand skills. Everything's handmade. You know, clients stay with me for a long time, and, you know, they'll go, oh, you know, I can't afford to have another piece made. And then they'll arrive, you know, in 6 months' time and go, oh, well, I'm thinking about this. What do you think? And so people collect my work then. But also the collections as well, you know, people collect those. They're slightly different to the bespoke work, but they're still all my style. And I'm very lucky because I guess I get to do my passion every day. I mean, it's hard work, as you know, running a business. You know, the business side of things is hard. Sometimes it is particularly stressful. And But, you know, generally speaking, I, you know, really enjoy it. And I also mentor as well. I work a lot with young artists, young graduates, or people just starting to start up a business. So teaching them about how to turn their art into something that's going to make money. And that is particularly challenging, but it's also particularly rewarding because a lot of artists, makers, designers have no idea about how to actually run their practices as a business, how to find clients, how to talk to clients, how to price their work correctly. And that's something I've been doing more of in the last few years. And, you know, so I do all of those things. Yeah. So I write every day for one of them. I'm writing blogs or social media and I love that. You know, it's a way for me to put my point of view across. And it's about, you know, and I have two small children. And so it's about juggling all of that. And
you guys can hear that Sarah, regardless of, she still has the diagnosis of the IBSD, but you could hear that it's not stopped this woman one bit. She is leading a full and dramatic and luscious delicious life, regardless of her diagnosis. And that's what I love about your story, Sarah, is that it doesn't stop you.
Yeah, just before Christmas, I think I actually took seriously ill again, where I was struck down with pneumonia and happened all very suddenly. I was very lucky. I went to A&E and the doctor sent me home. I was very lucky to understand that within the next few hours my body had deteriorated, and I went back to A&E, and at that point I had severe pneumonia and sepsis poisoning. And if I hadn't have gone to hospital, if I'd been another 48 hours, I would have been dead. I mean, this has only happened recently, and you know, all of a sudden I was faced with, I think it took 2 days before the antibiotics and the drips and everything to really kick in, where I was probably on the brink 50-50 going either way. I remember the laugh of it was, you know, these doctors are trying to save my life, and I have all these allergies and I have all these problems taking drugs, and I'm allergic to loads of antibiotics, and they're trying to find the antibiotics that are going to work. And every time they come to me with a drug, I'm going, oh no, but you have to keep control of my IBS. I can't let my stomach get out of control or I'm in trouble. Do you know, that's all that I could think about. And I was going, you know, no, I'm not taking that. And, you know, I was making them go away, and they didn't like that. They didn't like being questioned. But I was trying to tell them if they could put the drugs in through the IV, which I already had in, it would bypass my stomach and I didn't have to worry about whether or not it was going to affect my stomach. And eventually they worked with me when they realized that, you know, and I knew what I was talking about. I survived that. That has wiped me out again, wiped my system out again. My immune system's back to zero. Sepsis in itself, there's a debate, is it autoimmune related, because it's where your body attacks itself. I'm actually thankful. I mean, basically, I've been given a second chance. It wasn't my time to go, but I am thankful that I have the knowledge of surviving the IBS all those years ago, because I know exactly how to build my body up again. And it's almost back to the beginning again, but it won't take me so long because I have this arsenal of information behind me. And the advice from doctors, there is no advice for sepsis survival because most people don't survive. So there's very little advice. There's a couple of organizations. They're the only people you can get advice from. Back to researching again, what can I eat? You know, it's like living, like as you said, with autoimmune, it affects us all differently. But there's chronic fatigue, muscle weakness, brain fog, all these things which I probably already had in some capacity, but now all of a sudden they have been catapulted again. My immune system is really low, my liver function's terrible because it has to get rid of all the antibiotics that I had. And so the first thing I did was turn to food. What things can I eat to help all of those issues? And how am I going to eat them? How can I keep my gut stable? And I kept my gut stable throughout all of it.
And that's what's so important, is knowing how food is medicine. We're just about out of time with the Autoimmune Hour here, and it's been just a pleasure to have you on, Sarah. Thank you for sharing your story, because it's so powerful that regardless of what happens, that you can lead a rich, full life, and wishing you so much prosperity and health on your recovery. I think all of us with autoimmune, we're nodding our head. We're going, oh, a setback. Yes, been there, done that for sure. So everyone, be sure and join me next Friday on another Autoimmune Hour when we share more fascinating stories just like Sarah's, and we'll have professionals on as well in the next coming weeks. So everyone, have a great week. Weekend, whatever your adventures. And as always, enjoy.
The information provided on lifeinterruptedradio.com is for educational purposes only. What you hear, read, and see on Life Interrupted Radio is based on experience only. The information presented here should never be used for any legal, diagnostic, or treatment purposes. Always seek sound legal, medical, and/or professional advice regarding any problems, conditions, and any of the recommendations you see, hear, or read here on Life Interrupted Radio. You've been listening to Life Interrupted Radio. To learn more, listen to other shows, and gain free resources that can help empower your life, be sure to stop by lifeinterruptedradio.com. This episode is brought to you by mindfulnessinactionbook.com. To get your free 4-minute guided meditation to relax, refresh, and renew in just 4 minutes, and who doesn't have 4 minutes? Stop by mindfulnessinactionbook.com now. This guided meditation is in handy MP3 format, so you can use it anywhere, anytime. Download it now at mindfulnessinactionbook.com.
Do you want to be a better leader, have better relationships, become more self-aware, be a better communicator? Hi, I'm Sharon Saylor, best-selling author, professional speaker, and executive coach. And my life passion is empowering professionals to be the best that they can be. After years of working with professionals, I've discovered the 7 things nobody is telling you that can cost you your clients, sales, and even your career. And I want to give it to you free. You've heard my show, you know my passion, and maybe we'll be working together sooner rather than later. So go grab this ebook now to find out the 7 things that's costing you big time over at sharonsaylor.com/radio gift.
This is the EWN Radio Network.